On episode 442 of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we welcome Rocky Schneider and discuss his book, Return to Center, Strength Training to Realign the Body, Recover from Pain, and Achieve Optimal Performance. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/442.
Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness. The 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is here for you. I'm your host, Alan Meisner. I'm an NSAM certified personal trainer with a specialization in corrective exercise and fitness nutrition. Let me be your coach as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go.
Finally, a program that helps grown-ups just like you lose a size in 30 days, guaranteed. I'm relaunching the Lose a Size Challenge we did back in October. It was hugely successful and helped so many people that I knew I had to bring it back. Now, unlike most of the challenges we've done on 40 Plus Fitness, this one focused on a specific outcome. You will drop a size in 30 days. I guarantee it. But beyond just feeling more comfortable in your clothes, you're going to look and feel better. You're going to have more energy. You're going to have confidence that you didn't have before, and you're going to stop chasing those diet and exercise fads that never seem to work. This one does. Go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/lose. That's L-O-S-E. 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/lose and sign up for the Lose a Size Challenge today. I guarantee if you do exactly as I'm asking you to do in this program, you will lose a size in 30 days or I'll give you your money back. Go check it out, 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/lose. Our guest today is a certified strength and conditioning specialist. He is a nationally recognized expert in human movement with nearly 30 years of professional experience and knowledge. He has trained thousands of clients ranging from grandparents to professional athletes and Olympic champions. Aside from owning and operating his training studio in Santa Cruz, California, he travels far and wide providing educational workshops to personal trainers, manual therapists, chiropractors, and physical therapists. With no further ado, here's Rocky Schneider. Rocky, welcome to 40 Plus Fitness.
Alan, it's great to be on your show. I really appreciate the time. Thank you.
I actually lived in the San Jose area during my career. I was there for about a year before they promoted me and forced me to move to Massachusetts. So I took your route backwards.
Well, that's fantastic. Now, San Jose, yeah, we're right over the hill on Santa Cruz Mountains on the coast here, Central Coast in Santa Cruz. But where did you move to in Massachusetts?
Our offices were in Marlboro. And so I rented a house in Groton. Nice. And would, you know, do that drive. But, I loved going down to Santa Cruz. That mountain pass driving was a little scary. Especially sometimes coming back, depending on who was driving and who was drinking. But beautiful, beautiful coastline, beautiful, beautiful place. And I said, every time I went down there, I had a good time. So I think you're in a really, really sweet spot there.
We are. You know, Chuck Yeager was the test pilot and fighter pilot who was the first to break the sound barrier. So he was going up in these machines, not knowing if they were going to stay together or anything. And the story goes that when he was asked what it was the scariest ride he ever took, and he said the drive over Highway 17 from San Jose to Santa Cruz.
I can believe it. I can believe it.
I don't know if it's true or not. I'm not going to doubt it.
I can attest to that. It's definitely the scariest ride I've ever done. And I did a 763-foot bungee jump. So, you know. But anyway, your book is called Return to Center, Strength Training to Realign the Body, Recover from Pain, and Achieve Optimal Performance. And I think everyone here will kind of resonate with the word pain. When you're over the age of 40, in many cases, that becomes a regular daily occurrence or a daily part of our lives, unfortunately. And then, you know, when we talk about performance, I always try to say on here, it's not that we're asking you to run a 100-yard dash or pole vault or run a marathon or anything, but performance is just being the best you can be. And in many cases, the things we've done in our lives structurally have made us unsound.
And your book is basically designed to help us somewhat self-diagnose that a little bit and do some exercises that are going to return us to center. So it's a really cool book. And I was telling you earlier before we got on the call, I was reading the book and I was thinking the other day, I was, you know, in my gym that's empty because there's no one there working out, but I was looking in the mirror and I looked at myself for a minute and I said, okay, but after reading your book, I was thinking, damn, he's right. You know, I've got some work to do.
Well, I think that's the case for everyone in our culture and society. We have evolved so far with technology that it's taken away purposeful physical activity of the human form. And if you don't use it, you lose it. And combine that with maybe surgeries or accidents, illnesses, whatnot, it just draws the body into these places subconsciously that we're adapting into to be the most efficient we can be at any given moment with whatever we're dealing with. But there's no magic reset button when that experience is all over. Like you sprain an ankle and you learn subconsciously how to limp around to avoid the pain. And before you know it, that gets normalized. And now the way in which you promote movement and support your body weight has shifted. But the exercises in the gym don't necessarily take that into consideration because most of them were built with the understanding that we're perfectly symmetrical when that actually isn't the case.
This episode of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is sponsored by Audible. Audible is the leading provider of spoken word entertainment and audiobooks, ranging from bestsellers to celebrity memoirs, news, business, history, fiction, and of course, health and fitness. In fact, our guest, Dr. Skillicorn's audiobook, Healing Depression Without Medication, is available on Audible. The Audible app is completely free to download and use on Apple or Android devices. Have a smartphone and a tablet and like to switch between the two? No worries. The Audible app lets you pick right up where you left off. I find their app to be better and easier to use than any podcast app out there. By the way, they're also producing podcasts. I love Audible because it lets me get out and about and enjoy wonderful audiobooks. When I want to go on a long walk, I'll pick up something in my library based on my mood, fiction or nonfiction, and hit the road. Power user tip. I put it on 1.5 times speed as I've found when the narrator is talking faster, I walk faster. I love having Audible as my walking companion. Audible is offering you a free trial at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/audible. That's AUDIBLE. You're listening to a podcast, so I know you understand the value of on-demand audio content. In my opinion, Audible is the best at that. Get your free trial at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/audible.
So like I'll go into the gym and I'll say, okay, let's load up the deadlift bar. And I'll get down and I'll do a good deadlift with good solid form. And then, you know, unlike CrossFit athletes, I'll actually set the bar back down, you know, but I don't think of it in terms of, and you kind of brought this up and it's something I didn't think about is if I were actually trying to use that in a functional way, let's say like, you know, my wife wants to buy a refrigerator and I want to be able to help bring the refrigerator up a flight of stairs to get it into our apartment. I'm not just lifting the refrigerator up and setting it back down. I'm now going to lift it up and actually start taking some steps with that load. And if my structure, you know, it's easy for me to keep my structure intact when I'm just standing still, or at least I think it's easy. It's easier for sure. But, and then I do that lift, but because I'm not necessarily properly aligned because I'm not proper, you know, I've had issues that have happened in the past. I'm so much more prone to injury and it's not a true strength. And as you said in the book, it's actually not even really, if you think about it, a true functional strength for me to be able to do a deadlift.
No, in fact, you're doing a deadlift with a compromised structure, repeating the pattern of movement you've developed over the course of that time, which is going to favor the body to bring certain muscles into play, but not others. And then what happens over time is not only does a wear pattern occur, probably in joints or tissue like ligaments or tendons, but an imbalance in the levels of force production that the muscles are generating. So now it's not actually self-correcting and bringing you back into a more balanced aligned place, but further taking you out of alignment compromising your structure to a greater degree. But the interesting thing is now you can generate more force and heavier loads, but your structure is more compromised. So it's just piling more and more weight onto a structure that is weakening over time. And you continue to do that, and something has got to give, whether it's the lower back or a knee or a hip or headaches or migraines or irritable bowel syndrome. It can manifest in a whole bunch of different ways. It doesn't necessarily have to mean joint pain. You know, we have so many wonderful approaches in our culture these days that have mainstreamed into our way of health and fitness, such as chiropractic medicine. It's 125 years old today. It's still, not today, but this year. And its primary focus is to bring the body back into alignment where joints are properly spaced, where muscles have a proper balance, where internal organs are in their proper position, and the nervous system flows unimpeded. The same thing with acupuncture. If people will go to an acupuncturist, they have a different philosophy, but the fundamental approach or the philosophy is the same, but the approach is different. So they're trying to get the energy to flow unimpeded. And then even massage therapy or yoga, these are all approaches that are all about restoring the body back into a central place. Unfortunately, our culture has created a fitness movement that is based upon the aesthetics of bodybuilding, the explosiveness of Olympic style weightlifting, and the brute force of powerlifting, all of which do not take into consideration trying to restore the body back into a more balanced form. So the whole thought behind the book was, well, can't we take these movements that we're familiar with and create a way in which we can use them as tools to guide us back to a more balanced place where joints have their best spacing, where nerves can actually conduct proper messages to the muscles to produce even greater amounts of force. So we have greater amounts of balance with less wear and tear on the body. And these movements can actually benefit us over the long run and create an enhanced longevity rather than diminish us. That's the whole goal within the book.
Yeah. Now you put something in the book, and the first time I read it, I said, okay, no, I obviously misread that. I need to read that again. And then I read it again, and I'm like, he just said what I thought he said. And then I read it a third time, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna have to keep reading, but I'm also gonna probably use this as a question I had to ask. Is you said something in the book, it was. The joints move and then the muscles react.
That's right. Joints act, muscles react. It's one of the laws of motion. According to one of my mentors, Gary Ward, who is the author of What the Foot and an incredible education course for physical therapists, movement specialists, chiropractors, and medical doctors even have taken this course called Anatomy and Motion. And essentially, it's this: joints move, or joints act and muscles react. Imagine this, Alan, you're standing up and you want to sit down in your chair. Are the muscles pulling you into the chair?
Well, no, in that instance, I'm definitely allowing gravity affect the movement, yeah.
Yes, and therefore the joints must move and just moments before the muscles kick in, because the joints move you into a falling position. And then the muscles control the deceleration of your body into that chair. So the joints act followed by a muscular reaction. That's one way in which we move. The other way is that muscles must lengthen before they shorten. And that would be maybe getting out of the chair. As you get out of the chair, you need to lean forward and load muscle tissue into a lengthened position in order for the nerves to understand that they need to actually now start shortening to lift you out of the chair. So joints act, muscles react, and then muscles lengthen before they contract. And using those governing laws of human motion, now we can start to look or filter through that, how exercises are planned out, or even just looking at the common exercises in a gym. Most of them don't really abide by that, such as just the simple bicep curl that everyone loves, or bench press. You know, we focus on the shortening of the muscle, but not necessarily lengthening and loading into the tissue. all that much. It will lengthen as you say, lower the bar down, but it lengthens back to just the neutral point before shortening back up again. So how we move through space is actually we elongate the muscle tissue followed by a very short concentric contraction to propel us forward. Most of the time, it's all about controlling the fall of landing on planet Earth with a very short kind of powerful contraction to leave planet Earth. And in biomechanics, we call that pronation, landing on the planet, and supination, driving off the planet. Those are really our two options when we consider movement. And then it's just variations of pronation or supination. If you do it properly, then all the joints move the way they should, all the muscles react the way they should, whether you're landing or leaving. But so many people don't do that properly. And so we take that understanding of biomechanics and apply it to strength and conditioning so that we're not only getting a person stronger and building a more aesthetically pleasing frame. Those are byproducts. It's really, can we get the efficiency of movement reestablished, balance better created, a posture restoration occurring, and just overall organic function, like organ function, actually restoring if we bring the body back in balance. It's more than just, you know, lifting weights and putting them down.
Yeah. And you were in one part of the book, you were talking about this hairdresser and hairstylist. And I think that one was where it kind of all resonated with me, because it was like there was one kink in the armor. You know, we'll talk about chains, you know, the body's a chain. And if you mess up one little bit, and we do that as a part of corrective exercise. We'll talk about, okay, we have to deal with this imbalance or this problem or that. But taking it to that level of the joint before the muscle, you had the situation with this hairdresser and it was her big toe.
Yeah. You know, the hardest thing for me to unlearn doing what I do is to not go to the muscle or soft tissue first, because we're trained as trainers to know what muscle does what, but we're not trained in terms so much of what the joints do. And when we talk about joints, and I'll tell you about the hairstylist story in a second, but when we talk about joints, we've got 360 joints in the body, and those joints are surrounded by a whole bunch of muscles, not just one muscle or one big muscle, but dozens of muscles around most joints, like the big ones, especially like the hip and pelvis have 57 muscles that cross over the pelvis. Some go down to the legs, some go up to the spine or rib cage, and a couple go up to the arms. You know, we've got all these muscles that cross a joint. And conventionally, we've been blaming one particular muscle that being weak, or using the word inhibited, and trying to get that one muscle to turn on, and all the world's problems will be solved because we get the glute medius to fire. But in truth, maybe it's just the way in which the joints are moving that are shutting that muscle off. Maybe if we got the joints to properly move through three-dimensional space, that we awaken and restore all the soft tissue. So that it's not just the glute that's turning on that we need. What about turning off other tissue? So in the case of the hairstylist, this neighboring salon, a person came over from, and she could not lift her arm beyond shoulder height and without excruciating pain. And she had worked pretty well with a physical therapist to get her arm at least up to that point over the course of weeks or months. And she just came over and said, is there anything you can do to help me? I had to go home yesterday. I couldn't even cut. I'm in so much pain. I can barely lift my arm. I can't even hold scissors right now. So we just went through a history of what her life had been like. What has she experienced? And maybe it was something really recent, like she had fallen and landed on her shoulder. That could have been it. But it wasn't. She didn't have anything wrong with her shoulder. She didn't hit it or hurt it in any way. It's something that developed over time. We found out she had a hysterectomy, she told me about. She shared that information, which could very well, the scar could have pulled her out of alignment and put strain on her frame and made it harder for her to lift her shoulder. She had broken her big toe and actually had surgery where she had pins and in the base of her foot had to be implanted or inserted so that they could create, I guess, a better position for the foot. Whatever the orthopedic thought was the way of doing it, that's what they did. And there were some other kind of things going on. But what we found out was, well, I just asked her to lift her big toes off the floor with her feet on the ground just to see what kind of movement those toes might have. And she couldn't lift her injured foot the toes of that foot off the ground at all, which to me, knowing how joints have a relationship with one another, was something I really wanted to explore. And so we started looking at that, and she said, oh, you know what? I had this this fall, and when a few years after I had that surgery on the foot, and actually the pins dislodged through the surface of my sole, and they had to remove them. I'm like, wow, okay, well, that's pretty significant information. What do you think the likelihood of her brain is thinking about putting weight on a foot where the last time that happened, like pins shot out the base of it? Chances are no one's going to want to put some weight on that area. So we started to get some weight onto her foot and get her to load weight properly over that injured site, which is no longer painful because the injury was so long ago. But the brain doesn't know that. It's still on this feedback loop of doing the same pattern over and over to try and survive that injury and surgery and so on. So once we got weight over that foot, I asked her just to check in with her range of motion on that shoulder. And she was able to raise it up over shoulder height, not quite overhead, but without any pain. And she was just kind of like, wow, that's okay. I didn't do anything for your shoulder. We didn't do any stretches or rubber band exercises. All we did was put weight on the front of your foot, and now your shoulder moves better. Well, isn't that something worth exploring? So we did a little bit more loading onto that foot, loading into the leg, getting the joints to behave in a way that they should. The knee should go this way. The hip should go that way. The pelvis should tilt this way. The rib cage should tilt this way, and so on. And just get her to feel these movements. And then she checked in with her shoulder again, and her arm shot clear up to the ceiling. No pain. She was able to reach back behind her as if she was like sitting in a chair and reaching back for her purse. No pain. She was just dumbstruck. And really, it just shows you that symptom-based approach. If somebody goes into a doctor or some type of professional and says, I have shoulder pain, the first thing they're going to do is look at the shoulder. If there's inflammation, they're going to tell them, take anti-inflammatories and rest it. When the inflammation is just saying, I'm using this maybe too much, or I'm using it in a way that it's not meant to use, maybe there's some other areas that aren't doing their fair share in life. Maybe we should hunt down those. They don't do that. They just look at the symptom. They may give them some type of shoulder action and then send them on their way. And the problem wasn't there at all. It was just, the problem was really the foot and how she managed the mass of her body, standing at work and walking through space. And that opposite shoulder was taking its toll because of it.
Yeah. Now, we touched on this before, and I think it's important for us to circle back around and actually go through them. But you said your mentor came up with this anatomy of motion. In the book, you shared five rules. Could you go through those five rules? We've touched on one of them, but could you go through the rest of them?
Certainly. So joints act, muscles react, which is a very hard one for a lot of people to get their head around. But once you do, it opens up a greater understanding of human movement, in essence. Muscles lengthen before they shorten. So we have to, like a rubber band, we have to pull back before we let it go flying. That's just how muscles will work. We lengthen and load before we explode. Then we're also hardwired for perfection. So if we think about the brain's primary purpose, its first primary goal is to survive. And in order for that brain to survive, it must have oxygen, fuel, blood flow. And that means that anything that takes away from its primary purpose is going to be not as efficient as it needs to be. So the brain is constantly adjusting on a subconscious, autonomic level the way in which the body is moving and existing in the most efficient way it can. And that means that, say, you sprain your ankle. Now, what way are you going to move? Well, the brain is going to say, well, we got to shift the weight a little bit over more onto this leg. We'll let the person push off their toes, but we're not going to come striking down on the heel because that's going to be painful. So we need to adjust it. No, it's not the most efficient way, but it's the next most efficient way that we can do it. You don't sprain your ankle and suddenly the brain says, you know what? Let's start by doing handsprings or walking on your hands. That would not make sense. So we are hardwired for perfection. On the flip side of that, if we give the body or the brain a more efficient way of moving than what it currently is doing, then the brain's going to say, oh, that's actually a better way. It's reducing the need to expend excess energy. So that means better survival for me. Let's reinforce that movement pattern more. So if we can put somebody into a place where they are moving more efficiently, the brain is going to reinforce that, especially if that movement is reinforced physically over time. The brain will just continually try and strive for that. And so there's three. We orbit around a center, meaning that as you stand still, you're not really standing still. Your breath is bringing the rib cage in and out. The food that you digested is moving through your body. Blood is coursing throughout your body. And your mass is constantly shifting over your feet to try and keep you from falling down. So we're always orbiting around this ideal center. And the further we travel from center, the more compromised our structure and the weaker we typically are. So when the chiropractor adjusts your spine or hips or whatever and pulls you back into better alignment, you're actually in a much more balanced place and you have a center that is closer to the ideal from which you can orbit. And so that's a big part of what we look for is where is a person's mass and where is their center? Can we restore it into a more efficient manner, halfway between both feet, halfway between forward and back, where ideally, no matter where you go, you're starting from a central place. And then the other one is your movements are dictated by your perceived center. So not the true ideal, but wherever you find yourself shifting your body, that normalizes. And the further away you get from center, the less you are going to move optimally. There are plenty of athletes out there that are not properly aligned, and they are some of the best ones to get around their imbalances and their restrictions and still be world-class athletes. But just imagine if we were to take that world-class athlete and actually bring them back into a much more centrated place, what might their potential be from there? So those are the five rules of movement and so or motion that I will not only abide by, but I use as a governing kind of compass to help direct the programs we design in our studio to be the most effective they can be for all people that come in here. And I've had NFL players, NHL, NBA, that Santa Cruz isn't the hub for those sports, but they wander through here and they'll train with me. I've got some world-class surfers, of course, being in Santa Cruz, but then we've also got grandparents and little kids. Everybody can really abide by the philosophy of restoring a person back to a central place for optimal movement and performance compared to the conventional way that it's been going on for decades now.
Yeah. And the conventional way, which is, is the way we were brought up, you know, muscle and fitness and the whole bit. And we always thought about movement and the, you know, you talked about the pillars of human movement when you got into the strength part of the book. And I thought it was fascinating because I got into there and it was, you know, we talked about level changing, the push and the pull, which I think any fundamental exercise program is really going to focus on those three things. They just always have, and I think they probably always will. It's the rotation and the locomotion, which are the other two, that seem to get ignored in the strength formula. Can you talk a little bit about the pillars of human movement and how we can utilize those to optimize the work that we are doing? Because we're going to do some strength training. We need to, but yes. You know, how we can optimize it using those pillars.
Well, the interesting thing about the first three, level change, which is examples, the four major examples would be a squat, a deadlift, a lunge, and a step up. Two of those, more often than not, are performed bilaterally, meaning that both legs are doing hopefully the exact same thing at the same time. When you're doing a squat, both legs should be flexing at the hips and knees and ankles on the lowering down and then reverse directions as you come up. And the deadlift, we're hinging at the hips and we're tilting in the pelvis and so on. But if the same thing is kind of holding true when we think about push and pull, more often when somebody thinks of a pushing exercise, they're going to think of push-ups and bench press. When they think of pulling, they're going to think of some type of inverted pull-up or a pull-up itself or a seated row. All of these are bilateral movements. And so the interesting thing I find, Alan, is that the majority of programs that that I see, sometimes from other trainers, from professional sports teams even, is that they are so heavily biased toward these bilateral movements that all they're concerned with is this forward and backward action. In fact, most every exercise I've just listed, the squat, the deadlift, the bench press, push-ups, pull-ups, they can all be performed inside a doorway. So there's no real lateral movement and there's no rotational movement. And yet we're trying to train maybe athletes with these programs, say a basketball player or a tennis player, where a lot of their movement is three-dimensional. They are shifting side to side, covering the court. They're having to spin or turn to return a ball or to pass it or to pivot around a defender. And yet they're doing the majority of their strength and conditioning is all forward and back. So what happens is it hampers or dampens their ability to move in three dimensions. So when it comes to rotation, there's many ways that we can create rotation. In fact, if you looked at an anatomy chart, you'll find that most muscles attach not in a complete vertical or horizontal manner, but they're diagonal, that the striations are attaching in one area and either going up or down in a slanting action before attaching somewhere else in the body. So when those muscles shorten, they actually cause rotation. And when we run, we've got to have one leg swing forward while the other pushes off from behind, or the opposite arm is swinging forward while the other one is driving back, creating rotation through the rib cage and the pelvis. And there's even rotation occurring down into our ankles and our knees, our neck, our elbows. And yet, if we're not incorporating some kind of maybe a re-education or a renaissance of movement with rotation, then chances are they're not going to be doing it properly. And only areas that are really willing to rotate are going to take on the role of that. And unfortunately, one of the most common places that's not really designed for rotation, but take on the rotation when the hips or mid-back are locked up, is the lower back. And 80% of the people that we come into contact with sometime in our life are going to have a lower back issue, some greater than others. But the amount of sitting that we do as a nation and the amount of standing in place without purposefully moving through space are going to lock down the hips and lock down the mid-back. And the place in between, that link in between, is going to wreak havoc on our whole existence, because the back is only meant to maybe rotate 5 or 6 degrees left and right, not as much as, say, it is asked to on a regular basis. And then when it comes to locomotion, well, I mean, we've been on our feet for 2 million years, being hominids, you know, on contralateral bipeds, meaning that one arm swings opposite with the leg. And we do that, hopefully, the average American does 5,000 steps a day, but ideally, we want to do 10,000 steps a day, like the average Europeans, I guess. So we wear those little Fitbits to let us know that we're not moving enough, right? So even if you did the math, if we were to ideally do 10,000 steps a day, that's 3,650,000 repetitions over the course of a year. And if you're not doing it well, if you're not actually landing properly, then you're going to do that for almost 4 million repetitions, almost 2 million times on each leg, improperly. So if you land not so well on your foot, that's going to have an effect on how the knee has to behave and the hip and the spine. So much so that then people want to go and run. So now you've taken improper gait mechanics, people that are compromised in the way of moving, whether great or small, and now you're going to apply more force and activity to it. It's no wonder that we're going to see a lot of COVID-related running injuries already, or if not over the next few months, because that's one of the things people can do while they're sheltered in place, is just go outside and go for a jog. Well, if you've been sedentary for a prolonged period of time, there's no magic reset button you can hit when you walk out the door that's just going to restore it. So it's probably a good idea to get a sense of where you're missing movement, what's moving too much. Can I create a program that helps to address those issues and balance things out?
Yeah, and you've got some great guidelines and exercises in the book, so someone can actually physically look at themselves in a mirror or have someone else look at them and kind of give them somewhat of a diagnosis of saying, okay, there's an issue here that we want to drill down a little bit more into.
Yeah, exactly. there's three assessment tools that we put in the book. One is simply an easy way, a quick kind of resources. Where is the weight in your feet? Because by knowing that, we can have somewhat of an educated guess what might be going on with the rest of your structure, just where your mass is migrating toward. If you have more weight on one heel and the opposite forefoot, that's telling us you've got some torsion or rotation in your frame somewhere. And we can kind of just map it out where it might be and get a sense of, okay, well, these movements, these drills may be good for you to start to explore and see if you benefit from them. Then you can do, like you say, a posture assessment, standing in the mirror. Where are my shoulders relative to my head? Or where's my pelvis? Is one slightly higher on one side than the other? Do I tilt forward into my hips or do they tuck under? And so on. And then the third way of assessing is the breakdown of gait mechanics to a very basic degree. Like, can my hips and pelvis tilt forward and backwards? Can they sway evenly side to side? Can they tilt evenly, unrestricted side to side? And can they rotate left to right? And you can do the same thing with the rib cage and the shoulders. And once you understand what's missing in these or where you struggle, it tells you, well, these are the movements that you should have at your disposal every time you take a step across the room. And if you struggle with these basic movements, then you know you're compromising your whole way of moving and compensating and asking areas to do more than they should. So you can take the gait mechanics and this movement kind of assessment. You can do a static posture assessment, or you can do foot pressure. Any of those will lead you down the same trail to get to where maybe you might want to explore in terms of movement, flexibility, and whatnot.
Now, a lot of times when we're not moving well, and we do that for a number of times, it could be 3 million, it could be 100 million, because we've been doing it for decades, we're going to invariably end up with a side effect, and that side effect we typically call pain, because we've worn a groove, and that's not the kind of groove we want to have. So we have to deal with pain. And in the book, you share some guidelines for pain. Could you share those with us? I think this is really important for us to know, because really, I think this brings forward something that most of us are looking for help with pain. And I think many cases we don't recognize movement can actually be part of the solution.
Yeah, for sure. First, I mean, pain is a wonderful thing. It may not feel great in the moment, but pain as it is the subconscious brain's way of trying to communicate with a conscious mind and letting you know that whatever you're doing in this moment is not necessarily what we need to do. It's stressing us, and it's creating a threat within ultimately the survival of the brain. So the brain is going to send a threat signal to the conscious mind to let it know whatever's going on right now, can we change that a little bit? And it doesn't mean that we have to stop necessarily moving and rest and ice compression elevation. That may be the case for some things, but it could be that your brain is saying, you know, when you do this, let's take the squat for an example. When you do the squat and your knee is creating some pain, it doesn't mean that there's something going on in the knee. It could just mean that the mechanics that you're creating here are not the most ideal, and it's putting strain in a place that isn't ready to handle so much. So, and pain can come on many levels. A low level of pain might be simply itching. And a high level of pain is obviously something so excruciating that you're frozen, can't move, or you've got to find a place where you can get out of it. So there's some guidelines. Like, one thing is, don't try and move into pain. And this is the whole, can we smash the no pain, no gain mentality that we've been brought up with generation after generation? In essence, I want to quote Gary Gray with the Gray Institute. He's out of Michigan, a phenomenal physical therapist who has done remarkable work for the entire fitness industry and physical therapy world, as far as I'm concerned. He once said, I want the body to sing, not scream. And I've used that as a guiding light to know what movements I really want my clients, and for that matter, myself, to try and explore. The body shouldn't be burning. Like, I'm really just trying to get the burn going, because that's not really truly what I need. I want to feel that the body is after a workout that I am almost floating, that I am springing almost weightless, that I'm feeling taller in my body, that I have better alignment, that my movements are not something that I have to premeditate in regards to how am I going to climb these stairs or how am I going to bend over. You shouldn't have to think how to move. The body should naturally want to, but so many people are hesitant to move because the pain response has been something that has been reinforced over time. So don't move into pain. Recognize pain for what it is, in that it's your brain's way of telling you, we might need to look at this. Maybe modify the movement. Maybe you're going too far and you need to just shorten it a little bit to a point where you can accommodate the movement and then start to explore the ranges a little bit more. Those are basically the guidelines that I encourage people here. And I'm constantly saying, how does that feel? After every movement, go ahead and walk around. Use even simple walking as your assessment. Does that feel better? Where do you feel this? You know, there's a whole bunch of ways we can assess after every movement, but simply put, walking is a great way, especially for me doing gait analysis. I can see an immediate effect following an exercise on anybody that does it more often than not, and go, okay, that's what they need right now. That has actually drawn them back into a more comfortable swing with their arms, their body's more aligned, whatever the case may be.
And I think, and I appreciate you saying that, no pain, no gain, because I just think that mantra is, it's going to take us a long, long time to kill that one. But, you know, one of the key things that I came out of this with as we were talking, you know, the whole strength part, it was fascinating, was that we don't often think about the value of efficiency. We think about the brute force of being strong and moving big things, particularly guys, you know, the ego is how much can you bench mindset. But if you can move more efficiently, then you're moving more weight without that additional muscle mass or effort. And yes. I think that's a key thing that a lot of people miss, is that you know, you'll see them. They will call them. We used to call them grandpa strong or farm boy strong, where they're wiry and thin, but somehow they're a lot stronger than you would ever give them credit for. And it's just because they have good movement patterns. They work outdoors. They do their things, and they've just developed good movement, and they're efficient. They're very efficient with the way they're using strength.
And the brain itself, the brain is the governing wire here in terms of the ability, strength levels or force production, however you'd like to consider it. If your body is in a compromised position, the brain is going to lower the level of force production as a protective mechanism so that you don't get injured more often than not. So if you bring yourself back into a more structurally integrated place that is balanced, where the joints can communicate and they have this beautiful connected integrative relationship with each other, then the brain is going to say, hey, we're good. Let's go for it. Let's exert more force. So that brings into question what is strength? Is strength just your ability to produce force? If so, I can actually get somebody stronger in just a matter of seconds. Like, for instance, just have them do some particular exercise where they're challenging their strength level, and then give them a movement that draws them back into better alignment, whether it be a mobility drill or actually a strength exercise, or maybe it's honestly just using the foam roll and hitting some target spots that have been drawing them out of alignment, and then have them try that same movement again and reassess their strength levels, and I can easily make it so that their strength levels elevate than compared to the initial time. Or, you know, opposite end of the spectrum, I give them the wrong thing and their strength levels decrease because it's pulled them further out of alignment. We're constantly in flux. And the other thing I'll say is that everyone has a tendency to do the movements they are good at and not necessarily the movements that they need to improve upon. We focus on our strengths and neglect the areas where our body struggle to move into and out of. So everyone that goes to the gym has a certain program that they follow. And if they change the program around, there's still going to be a couple of exercises they like to do. And that's good to some degree.
Well, I'm guilty. I'm guilty.
Yeah, there you go. You have certain movements. So, and then we reinforce that. So we never ask the question, well, where is it that I'm weak? Where do I need to actually move my body? Where do I not go? Because the less we go there, the more likely the brain is just going to negate that movement entirely. So we're not going to know how to experience it. So a key here to get the body to be more efficient is to explore all movements that we can create. And that takes time, but it's a nice process nonetheless.
Yeah. And that's why I say I appreciate the self-realization as I thought back of looking at myself in the mirror, because I do think there's a lot of improvement that I now see in myself that I think I was a little bit blind to before. If you're hitting your numbers, you know, I've got that deadlift down to about where I want it for this age. I've got that squat, and you know, my bench press is okay, but it could be better, you know, kind of thing. But they're the bilateral, you know, push-pull level stuff that, you know, has always been out there. And I just see a huge opportunity for that, for me to improve.
Yeah. And well, I love the fact that your listening audience, you have the 40 plus fitness podcast, obviously you might have some under 40, but that's about the cutoff point for those that have been exercising all their life in the conventional way and repetitive action. Shoulder impingement could be considered a repetitive stress syndrome for bench pressing repetitively over time, right? It's not just carpal tunnel. But somewhere along the way in the 40s, we start to realize, oh, okay, this, I got to think of my future in longevity. And do I want to go through surgery after surgery of replacing this joint or that joint and so on? Now we have to rethink the way in which we exercise. And it's not just about the mating ritual of life in the 20s and trying to find your significant other in a bikini on the beach or whatever it is. We actually have to think about what true fitness and health is for me as I go into my 50s, 60s, and beyond. So the routines that we've been following, bodybuilding-based circuit machines in the gym and those type of things, have had their time in the sun, I guess. And now it's time to rethink how it is we want to treat our bodies as we go into the summer of our life and the autumn and so on.
Now, Rocky, I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be. What are three strategies or tactics to get and stay well?
Wow, that's a great way of defining wellness. I don't give a lot of recommendations on nutrition because that is a science unto itself that would require an entire lifetime to focus on. There are certain things that I have a tendency to lean toward, and that is food not made by man. So those that are found in nature, and hopefully those that are grown in that manner, are the things we might want to put into our body that we're working with, staying away from processed issues. So the fittest, well, I guess we'd have to think about what fit is. Fit for me is the ability to have the ability physically to pursue whichever activity I so desire. Now, it may need some conditioning. For instance, I enjoy surfing and mountain biking, but if I were to start to change my enjoyment towards, say, oh, maybe running or basketball, well, I'm not in running or basketball shape. I am in surfing and mountain biking shape. So I might have to create a kind of a different approach to that in order to get there. And happiest? Ooh, happiest. All right. Happiest is, we're talking a mood that can change at any point in time, that actually can shift much more readily and more quick than, say, healthy and fit. But happiest for me is community service, because getting outside the self. Anything that's self-serving, I guess healthy and fit would be more the self-focused, the centric way of helping to create wellness within. But then we have to think of the other aspect, the duality of nature. And how I find happiness is going outside of myself, doing things for others without being found out and not telling anybody about it. That's a huge one for me. Or just offering things out to the community. For instance, since we've been in sheltered in place March 16th, we've just opened up online exercise for the community at large, senior fitness classes, kids PE classes, Spanish speaking classes, webinars for health and wellness, and asking nothing in return, just simply putting it out there for the community free of charge and whatnot, because that's hopefully that's what we do, is we help each other out and we grow as a society and help one another. So I think those, for me, those are strategies and tactics that I would take.
Thank you, Rocky. If someone wanted to learn more about you, learn more about what you're doing and your book, Return to Center, where would you like for me to send them?
RockySnyder.com. That's S-N-Y-D-E-R. You can go to RockySnyder.com. You can also go to YouTube, because the one thing I didn't mention about the book is within the book, we have embedded these little QR codes. So as you're reading through the book or the ebook, which will soon be released, probably by the end of July, if not right about now, you'll take that QR code with your phone and just scan over it with your camera, and instantly a YouTube video pertaining to that drill or concept or exercise will appear on your phone to give you even more insight. And it'll be maybe 2 to 4 minute video. So it's hopefully going to be more like a pocket personal trainer, which will give you even more information than the written word would. So they can go to the YouTube channel that all the videos are housed on, which you can just search my name, Rocky Snyder, CSCS, which is Certified Strength Conditioning Specialist. And we've got hundreds, literally hundreds. I think I'm up to about 400 videos on there. And some of them are the ones I spoke of earlier about the community service, where if you are, say, 60 plus or more, and you want some movements for you, or you're, say, 40 and you want to learn how you can get a workout just using a backpack only, there's a whole bunch of different things you can check out.
Cool. Well, Rocky, thank you so much for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Alan. I just appreciate the opportunity to come on and share. And I hope that somebody finds some good within the pages of the book. And if you do, I'd love to hear about it. You can email me, rocky@rockysfitnesscenter.com. I'd love to get feedback, whether you think it was a good book or not. Just let me know. I take criticism. I don't take criticism very well. I'd like to say I do, but I'm not that big of a person.
Yeah, it was a good book. I'll say
thank
that.
You.
Okay.
Now, before you get out of here, don't forget to go check out the Lose a Size Challenge. Go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/lose and learn how you can lose a size in 30 days, guaranteed. Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet David E. Frost and discuss his book, Kaboomer, Thriving and Striving into Your 90s. Until then, have a happy and healthy week.